And welcome back. This is Magneto Mel. You are listening to EAA Radio. And now we are switching gears from the air traffic control into the Federal Aviation Administration a little bit here. We've got Roger Shaw. What kind of things go into airman education?
We're part of the Civil Aerospace Medical Institute in Oklahoma City under the Office of Aviation Medicine. There's actually six of us there that teach aviation physiology and post-crash survival techniques to FAA air crew. And then we do human factor training, the CRM courses for the Academy at Oklahoma City. And we developed those programs for general aviation also by putting out didactic material for them.
And what is that Academy?
The Academy at Mike Maroney Aeronautical Center in Oklahoma City, it had 60 years anniversary last year. It's been there for a long time. It's one of the center parts of the FAA in Oklahoma City. It's got logistics. It's got a bunch of different people there. We're a small division, a tenant on that base, we would call it, there at Will Rogers Airport.
What kind of stuff do you guys put out? What can we get from you?
Well, we can give you a free altitude chamber flight in Oklahoma City, or okay. We can send you to an Air Force base and give you a chamber flight there. We run a one-day physiology course for
That's the hypoxia.
And we go over all the physiology subjects, decompression, sickness, trap gas, all those things that affect you up to flight level 2550 up to 50,000. And we run a one-day course in Oklahoma City. That's free. And then the Air Force has programs that...
Provided you get yourself there.
Get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's free. You got to get there and pay for room and board. And then we run a coordinated course with the Air Force. And you can do those around the country. And they cost $50 a head. But that's a pretty good program. And we run that scheduling program through that. Through the office there in Oklahoma City. There's actually six of us. They're all ex-military folks that run the basic physiology course under the division, Aeromedical Education Division, that trains the doctors to get flight physicals. And then there's six of us that do the basic general aviation educational training programs.
I've got Dynamic Mike back here with me.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Why is it so important for people to experience an altitude chamber, sort of the onset of hypoxia?
Well, education of what hypoxia does to you above 12.5, which is where the regulations start requiring oxygen. If you have a feel for what your symptoms are and you've been in a chamber, you just have a little armor.
Are they that hard to sense in terms
of
onset?
Yes, they're very insidious. That's the problem with hypoxia. It's a very insidious feeling. Some people get very happy.
It's different for everybody.
And everybody's physiologically different. So when we talk about the physiological issues of hypoxia, it's really different each person. And it can be the onset rate of that problem at whatever altitude above 12.5 can vary from day to day due to self-imposed stresses, fatigue, stress, those things that affect you that you don't even know about. So those to have that flight gives you a little feel for that.
While you're still on the ground.
While you're on the ground and under safe hands. And because the time of useful consciousness, or what they call effective performance time at altitude, doesn't really mean you're passing out. It just doesn't, you're just not at home. And you're not making good decisions. You miss out little pieces of information. And most of the problems, you see a lot of hypoxia problems below 25,000 feet because it's so insidious and things like Payne Stewart and the Helios and those are the dramatic ones you see, but we don't have a lot of record of that at lower altitudes because somebody gets a hypoxia headache and they don't even know what that means. So there's a lot of research needed on that.
Physical symptoms and cognitive symptoms, I guess, and some people are more susceptible to one than another.
Yes.
So you need to know your
own personal symptoms,
signs.
And signs. Now, signs are what you can see on another pilot. Bluing of the fingertips, something out of the ordinary. They're not talking. But you usually don't go fly an airplane and say, "Well, I'm going to watch today for signs of hypoxia on you." If they do, I'm not sure you'd go fly with them. But it's something hard to see if you have gloves on or things like that. And by the time you notice some signs, it can be difficult to fix that.
Well,
so the symptoms are really what you want.
And I also, not only are there individual differences from one person to another, that just because this is how this person reacts doesn't mean that's how you will. nor that you will know what it feels like to be the one in the position, but also over time with changing conditions, your own symptoms and signs that other people may recognize and you couldn't can change to an extent.
Well, usually, yes, they can. Over extended periods of time, that's true. And aging, I'm sorry that I could talk at 64, that's true. It does. It changes over time, so if you haven't been in a chamber for a while.
So how often would you recommend that someone...
You know, it's important that if they can just get in the chamber, first of all, and then come back the second time, maybe 3 years later or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because the first time, you know, I remember in the Air Force, first time I went in the chamber, I'm going, oh, I didn't buy into this. What the heck? I meant to fly airplanes, not to sit in a box. But
right.
It's very... The first time it's sort of like, well, what am I really feeling? And then the second time you sort of cement that. I know that the military, I think they've changed. Their requirements used to be every 4 years, and now they've changed to like every four, and I think after that it's five, and then depending on how much flying they do. But it would be beneficial if you could just get into one.
Yeah.
We have some opportunities coming up to get folks into a hypoxia situation without going in a chamber. If you're interested in talking
right.
about that, we have a tent we bought that actually changes the mixture of the oxygen and the nitrogen in there to 30,000 feet. And we're doing research on that right now to bring that maybe next year to here, where you don't even have to go up to altitude. You can just walk in the tent and you're at 30,000 feet and sit down there and see what your symptoms are, but we're doing research on that.
Wow. Yeah, no, I just did this a little over a year ago, and so some people, they like the feeling. Some
yeah.
people, it's a very... I did not like it.
Yes.
I was not comfortable at all, so I can imagine a second time would be... Yeah. It would be better because I was too focused on how I did not like this feeling mm-hmm. than I was really on, okay, how am I going to recognize this when yeah. I'm in the middle of flight operations and everything else?
The danger of that is that most people get pretty happy.
Well, yeah, no, don't get
and
me wrong.
No.
It wasn't painful. I don't like the feeling of being, you know, out of control and a little bit, you know, less than there. It was just very uncomfortable for me.
A lot of people get euphoric, get very happy
right.
in there with their symptoms. In fact, more so than the belligerent people. And the danger of being happy with it is that it goes, you don't feel bad.
Another effect, which I was wondering if you could address, the first time a person goes into the chamber, and when I was in there, there was almost a bit of, the point isn't to see how long you can last without the mask on, is what I'm saying. The point isn't to be the last person to put it on, because sometimes if you're the last person to put it on, you're going to be the one that doesn't get it on. The point is to recognize it in enough time and be able to self-correct before it's too late for you to do so.
That's right.
And I noticed there's a lot of macho that goes on in there. And I went through it with the flight attendant class, because that's how the timing was.
Oh, okay.
And there wasn't necessarily as much with that. But when you get, you know, a group of pilots going through here, and every one of them is going to go back and talk about, well, I lasted for, you know, 5 hours before I... Obviously, that's not going to happen. But how do you circumvent that ego competition that gets
well,
in
that's,
the chamber?
Yeah, that's like trying to figure out human factors. How do you get past that pilot ego?
Yeah.
And we address that because it really has no bearing on the symptoms and the onset rate, because it's not how, because I've seen F-16 guys in the Air Force, they've been in there 5-6 times, and then all of a sudden they go in there and after about 15 seconds they're trying to take a nap.
Yeah.
Because it depends on, so it's not a time factor because it varies. And we get a lot of students that come into Oklahoma City from Kansas and Missouri and all up. And the students and some, not the pilots, they started thinking through that. But a lot of students are into the macho, how long did you stay off? And if we try to, it has no bearing on this. It's not an endurance. We have an oxygen dosimeter on them. And so we say, if you get two or three symptoms and that percent of oxygen on that gauge is down in the 70s, if it gets in the 60s, you better put your mask on. Whatever time. And fatigue has a lot of factors with that also. A lot of students, they drive down, they spend the night, they're tired, and they come in there. And if they're really tired and self-imposed stresses, you can really lose that time of useful consciousness. Really cuts back. Really cuts back.
Now, you mentioned that obviously the hypoxia, the pressure chamber, isn't the only one. Isn't the only piece of equipment or experience that you do in the
In the class.
In the class, yes. Thank you.
Well, that's just part of that. We do all the different subjects in physiology, give you a feel for that. And then we have the, like we have up here in the FAA hangar, the forum, safety hangar, we have the gyro one, which gives you the spatial disorientation. And if you're here at Oshkosh, you need to come in there if you're a pilot and fly that thing. Gives you the different, we talk about that.
So you do have that here?
We have that here up in the FAA forum hangar, and we're right there to the left as you walk in. And we want you to come in here. We talk about that. That's a very important subject, spatial disorientation. We're also giving a talk, by the way, tomorrow at 8:30 in the forum on that subject, the academic problems that happen with vestibular system and the visual cues that you run into with pilots that are going from VFR to IFR conditions. We also have, we haven't talked about the survival. We're going to catch that later.
We can go through.
But then that in the physiology class, we usually do 6 hours of physiology. We try to give the people some rides in the gyro machine. And it's a pretty packed day. In fact, we like to do more, but it just runs into too much time.
Well, we can go to break now. EAA Radio, 1210 AM, 100.7 FM, and on the web at airventure.org/radio.